Life Audio.
Christian Parent Crazy World with Catherine Seegers is brought to you by Life Audio and is part of our Faith Toolkit series. For more inspirational faith-affirming podcasts, visit lifeaudio.com.
Welcome to Christian Parent Crazy World, the podcast that tackles tough topics to help you be a godly parent in an ungodly world. I am your host, Catherine Seegers, and in today's episode, we will answer this vitally important question. How do Christians wrestle through the dilemma we face at the ballot box right now? Oh, yeah, this is a tough one. Today, we are continuing our conversation with the great Oz Guinness, a man who has a perspective like none other in the world when it comes to freedom. We have a very frank exchange about where we are as a nation and the kind of leader we so desperately need right now. We talk about the very real dilemma that many Christians face when voting. We don't have a pure choice there. And Oz shares with us a prayer that he and his wife pray every single day for the leader that we need. That's the ground we cover in this episode of Christian Parent Crazy World. So let's get started.
But look around you. Your family, your faith, they're not in the way. They are the way.
From the creators of Jesus Revolution comes the incredible true story.
It's going to be dangerous and scary and giving up. It's not an option.
The story of one family's journey from down under to center stage. Unsung Hero, a For King and Country film starring Candace Cameron Bure and Terry O'Quinn. In theaters now. Visit unsunghero.movie to learn more. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
As always, be sure to hit that subscribe button on whatever app you're listening on and head over to KatherineSeegers.com to subscribe there as well. I've got so many great resources to share with you. Now, last week's episode covered quite a lot of ground, distinguishing the imperatives of the American Revolution from the three subsequent world revolutions, the French, the Russian, and the Chinese revolutions. And as Oz so powerfully pointed out, Americans are now embracing the ideals of the wrong revolution. We've traded the ideals of the American Revolution, which was based on scripture and the cry for freedom that we see in Exodus, for the ideals of the French Revolution, which is utopian in nature. It does not recognize our human bent towards sin. So if you missed the last episode, I highly recommend that you give it a listen to first. I showed us how the foundation of our government properly addresses man's inhumanity to man by establishing a system of checks and balances. He also expertly addressed the principal concern of injustice, which both the left and Christians on the right are concerned with. The left, however, has solutions that fail repeatedly. We would be wise to learn from these mistakes. The Christian response, however, has led to the greatest liberation movement in human history through the likes of William Wilberforce, who tirelessly fought his entire life to accomplish abolition in Great Britain. And it was the Christian abolitionists in the United States, primarily the Quakers and also the new Presbyterians in the North, who fought tirelessly to accomplish abolition in America. We have a proud heritage accomplishing justice. As Christians, moms and dads, we must teach that heritage to our kids. That's a topic I covered back in episode 9, by the way, which was titled How the Christian Worldview Creates a World We All Want to Live In. In today's conversation, Oz chronicles the long march on our institutions here in the West as stated in the last episode, Oz is not naive about Marxism. He lived through a deadly Marxist revolution at the hands of Mao Zedong in China. We are very naive about Marxism here in the West, as neo-Marxist ideology has taken over our institutions of higher learning. And then after that, we have a very frank conversation about the crisis of leadership we have here in America. Our nation is at a critical juncture. And at one point in our conversation, Oz urges us to vote. Look, I know that this is an easy decision for some Christians right now and not so easy for others. I don't want to pretend that this is simple for everyone. So Oz and I address the serious reservations that some have at the ballot box. Let me say, I know that may not be your perspective. For me, I'm settled on what is best to do. But I have friends who struggle with this decision. If you or someone you know does struggle with the choice that we have this November, this conversation may help. I hope it does. I do not discard serious concerns about character. Neither does Oz. But we both acknowledge what is at stake and what we believe is the best course of action from here. And Oz offers the most powerful and poignant prayer for the leader we need so desperately right now. By the way, we recorded this episode late last year, so the field of candidates had not yet narrowed to the definitive choice that we have right now. It is essentially a two-person race at the moment. That may change at the Democratic National Convention this summer. We'll see. But here is part two of my conversation with Oz Guinness.
Now, but if we look at history overall, there's no question we're on the side of the angels. Slavery, sadly, is the norm in history.
Yes.
Abolition is the novelty. It was the evangelicals and the Quakers who were the abolitionists. So I'm proud and grateful of the fact my ancestor, Arthur Guinness, the brewer, was a friend and a supporter of William Wilberforce. Mm. And Wilberforce, the greatest social reformer of all, an evangelical brother. The tragedy of this country was that parts of the South were supportive of slavery. Many evangelicals in America have a bad conscience still, and they don't realize that abolition was led by evangelicals. But go back to the difference between the French and the American revolutions. It explains the present polarization. Everyone's aware of the division in America. America is as deeply divided as at any point since just before the Civil War. But why? A lot of people say it's the social media. Some say it's the coastals, California, New York, against the heartlanders in the Midwest and the South. Some say it's the populists over against the globalists. All of those have a part to play. But I would argue the deepest division is between those who understand America, the Republic, freedom, from the perspective of the American Revolution, 1776, and those who understand America and freedom from the perspective of the ideas coming down from the French Revolution. So postmodernism, the cancel culture, the sexual revolution, critical race theory, all those sort of things are the heirs of the French Revolution. Now, I'm a Christian, you're a Christian, many of our audience are. You remember the book of Galatians. Mm-hmm. You know, Paul says to the Galatians, "Who's bewitched you? You're following another gospel. You came to faith through one gospel. You're following a different gospel." What I'm saying to America and others too, who's bewitched you, America? You're following a different revolution. You came to freedom through one revolution, and now you're being taken over by another revolution. But here's the tragedy, Catherine. There's no Lincoln today. So when America was deeply divided in the 1850s, he addressed the evil of slavery. America, a house divided cannot stand, he said. America cannot continue half slave, half free. Mm. And in a way, what I'm saying today is America cannot continue half 1776 and half 1789. The trouble is there's no Lincoln. There's no national leader, certainly no Christian leader, saying, America, you've got to choose.
Yeah, you're so right about that. I know we would love to see that. I was a little bit impressed. We'll have to see how this pans out. I was kind of disappointed with some of the voting leading up to the new Speaker of the House, I kind of hoped that Jim Jordan would get in. And then Mike Johnson came. Did you hear his opening speech? It was kind of interesting. He talked about the American creed. He talked about Marxism. He talked about his great faith. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if he'll become one of those national voices, but we certainly need one. That is for sure. Did you hear his speech?
I did. He is a good friend.
Oh, wonderful.
A wonderful Christian brother and a very thoughtful Christian. Of course, he's up against an almost impossible task with such a razor-thin majority.
Right. We should add him to our prayer list every day, shouldn't we?
We need to pray for people like him at every level, including the presidential level.
Absolutely. You know, I was introduced. I was not familiar with him. He's from Louisiana, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So I wasn't familiar with him. And I was so pleasantly surprised. I really enjoyed his speech. Let me read this from page 3 of your book, because it really encapsulates what you're talking about. You say, quote, "In one generation, America has been bewitched by ideas and ideals that owe nothing to 1776 and the American Revolution and everything to 1789. And the French Revolution. In short, partly through design and partly through drift, America appears to be abandoning the ideals of the American Revolution for the ideas that are disastrous, not only to America, but to freedom and the future of humanity." You've just kind of explained to us that crossroads that we are at. And I would like to address for a few moments, I've heard you talk about how we've ended up here. The long march on the institutions, I think, would be of particular interest to my listeners, because we're trying to raise children and we're sending them off to universities, and too often they're coming back having abandoned their faith after they've been bewitched by these other ideas that they're encountering. And I was looking back, and some of the people I've heard you talk about, and you certainly wrote about Antonio Gramsci in your book, he was the leader of the Italian Communist Party, I believe, around the 1900s. I think he lived, 1891 to 1937. But he identified 5 pillars of Western society that have to fall in order for the Marxist revolution, the Cultural Revolution, to take place. He identified religion, family, education, media, and law. And a large part of the way he has implemented that, or the neo-Marxists have implemented that, you know, followed by Horkheimer and Herbert Marcuse and Angela Davis and so many of the others that have followed, was through the Long March. So I would like to hear, what is your report card? How is Gramsci and his cohorts, how are they doing on those 5 pillars, religion, family, education, media, and law? And how have they managed to do that through the long march through our institutions? Explain to us what that is.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Well, Catherine, let me back up a bit. When we talk about Marxism, many people think that can't be, because this is not classical Marxism or communism.
Right.
And there's a difference between classical Marxism, communism, proletarian strikes, revolution, and what Gramsci called, which is cultural Marxism. And his idea was you win the cultural gatekeepers of a society, and then you sweep around and win the whole culture. So the five pillars you mentioned are all cultural, mm-hmm. not so much political. So his ideas in the 1920s, he wrote from jail, and incidentally, his American translator of his book is the father of Biden's transport secretary, Pete Buttigieg.
Did not know that.
Who was a pretty radical person, too. Anyway,
yes.
His ideas were picked up by the Frankfurt School, and they became very important in the 60s through Herbert Marcuse, as you said. And it was in 1968, a very key year, because Martin Luther King assassinated, Senator Robert Kennedy assassinated. 100 American cities were ablaze with the riots, far more than 2020. But the radicals knew they wouldn't win in the streets. They needed to do a long march, a slow incremental detour, winning the hearts and minds in the colleges and universities, the press, the media, the world of Hollywood and entertainment, and then sweep around and win the whole culture. Now, that's 50 years ago, and they have effectively done it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what you've seen in the pro-Palestinian protests is how incredibly deeply this has gone. So if you know where Islamism is coming from, I call it the Black Wave. Islamism in the 1940s was a tie-in between Hitler and radical Islam. But after Hitler died and the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem went to Berlin and he brought in the Muslim Brotherhood too, after Hitler died, they switched from being right-wing to being left-wing and brought on board things like anti-imperialism, anti-colonialism, and so on. So today you have radical Islamism tied in with the radical left, and the way that's breaking out in the American campuses is incredibly concerning because in 68, they knew the protests alone wouldn't do it. They needed the Long March to be successful. Well, the Long March has been successful.
It has.
So now the campus protests are coming, showing you how far the inroads of the Long March have gone. So I put it this way, that the radical left meets the open border crisis, meets the black wave of radical Islamism. We're at an incredibly serious point in the degeneration of the American Republic and of the West itself.
Mm. You know, when I look back, well, you look at radical Islamism, they were committed to the weapon of the womb, weren't they, in proliferating and having many, many children and have proliferated throughout Western Europe because they are committed to the long game there, where they reproduce more quickly than the other faiths and atheists, certainly. The only other, from what I understand, the only other ideology or worldview that really is producing more in terms of the next generation are evangelical Christians. And then...
And Orthodox Jews.
Yes, yes, there we are. So they're committed to the long game there.
There's a link between faith and fertility.
Mm-hmm.
And between secularism and a lack of faith and a lack of a sense of future.
Mm.
So you can see how many people are giving up on having children. They don't want to bring children into a world where the climate catastrophe may mean we only have another 12 years and so on, all that sort of nonsense. But thank God, Christians and Orthodox Jews are really keeping up levels of having children. You're doing your job. I'm done. Well done.
Well, that's what Abraham and Sarah had. Yeah.
The point is, we have a faith in the Lord.
Yes.
So we have a faith in the future, however dark the present.
Mm, that's true. What it strikes me, though, is that radical Islam is committed to the long game. Cultural Marxists are committed to the long game. And I think back in the 70s and 80s, we had the religious right. Instead of marching on institutions, they marched to Washington and tried to correct it from there. But by the time we get to Washington, if they've already been corrupted in the institutions, then we're kind of going at that backwards. We're not nearly as strategic and in for the long haul, maybe as homeschoolers are, we're trying. And those, and I know a lot of people in my audience who are committed to helping their children have a Christian worldview that educate their kids in other ways as well. But evangelical Christians certainly are trying. But what do we need to do as Christians to help counteract this?
Well, we need to remember we're in a culture war.
Yes.
And a culture war is intergenerational. It's always at least 35, 50 years. Some people would say it actually takes place over 75, 100 years.
Mm.
You cannot fight a culture war by politics only.
Mm-mm.
So a lot of what's happening today, I call it a grand game of whack-a-mole. Here, scandal there, an outrage there, whatever. And you whack that one down and boycott this and protest. No. The real cultural changes are what matters are in families and in churches and in schools. So homeschooling, as you suggested, is incredibly important, things like that. But, of course, politics is important, too.
Mm-hmm.
And the tragedy is recently Americans, Christians, who are a little defeatist and there's a fatalism coming in, they're just simply not voting. And that's a disaster. I mean, I go around the country and people say to me, well, you know, I'm faithful. I want to be faithful like the early church. They kept their heads down under Rome and they were faithful. That's a bad parallel. Certainly we must be faithful, but the early church were faithful under an imperial dictatorship. They had zero room to move. They died for it and were prepared to. I'm not American. I'm an admirer of this country, but I'm living in this country. We're in a republic which was based on the Hebrew Republic. And in Israel, every Jew was responsible for every Jew. And that was the idea of we the people. There's a collective solidarity. So for Christians not to vote is a failure of discipleship and a failure of citizenship. Every evangelical voted, it would be important. But of course, as I was saying, it's not just politics alone. It's culture that is really making the difference.
Well, what would you say then? I would like to press this because I had this in my circles and I wrote about this. The choice we have at the ballot box, unfortunately, is not pure. And I know there are a lot of my friends who are like, I just can't bring myself to vote for someone. Well, it's just, you know, the elephant in the room, Trump. They could not bring themselves to vote for someone like that. And I certainly understand. And I've heard you chastise the Christian community, and rightfully so, for not holding him accountable for some of the things he said and he did, which turned off a lot of evangelical voters, a lot of Christian voters. And I get it. I get it. But when I personally looked at the alternative,
yeah,
I'm like, there was no other choice that I had. He wasn't my first choice, but for whatever reason, he was at the top of the ticket. And I don't believe we would have a war in the Ukraine right now. I don't believe that we would. I mean, it's even, you could make the case that what happened in Israel on October 7th may not have happened had Trump been in office. I think there's a very good case to be made for that. Certainly the Ukraine war, because we funded Russia by lifting sanctions and things.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I would have voted the same way. The alternative was worse. Sometimes you vote for the lesser of two evils.
Yep.
Another way, though, many evangelicals, because Mr. Trump was pro-life.
Mm.
Was he pro-life on principled agreement or as a matter of a transactional deal? It was the second. Trouble is, he was pro-life, so they gave him their support without any questions. We should never do that. So character always counts in a president.
Mm-hmm.
You just take two things, his narcissism. Mr. Trump, it's not about you. Leaders serve. Great leaders of free republics are teachers of freedom, like Moses. Mr. Trump, it's not about you. And secondly, your language. If I'd met him, I would have said to Mr. Trump, talk to Ivanka, your daughter, and to Jared, your son-in-law. They are Orthodox Jews, and ask them, what is the biblical view of evil speech? Lashon Hara. Evil speech in the Old Testament is tantamount to murder. And yet his insults and bullying set the standard in America for the rottenness of American public speech. Christians said to Mr. Trump, I love your policy economically, or the border, the wall, or whatever it was. And his policies were mostly terrific.
I agree.
but he needed to be challenged where he was wrong so that he didn't have uncritical, unwavering support. We should have been loyal, but challenged him when he was wrong.
Thank you. I think you're so right. And I had friends. We had these conversations. We sat in circles and I was encouraging them to vote. And I even wrote an article about the dangers of what could happen, what would happen. And, at that time, I didn't see the Ukraine war on October 7th and what happened in the Gaza Strip and everything. I didn't see that on the horizon, but just what could and would happen to our Supreme Court, what could and would happen to the challenge of the Electoral College. These things, these were critically important. And I wrote about them and I had friends that just could not bring themselves to pull the lever. And I respect them, but I respectfully disagreed. And I couldn't agree with you more. We do need to challenge our leaders. I can remember when he went out on the stage, I was shocked that he ended up at the top of the ticket in 2016. I really did. I told my husband after I saw him in that first debate, like, he's done, because I didn't think that people would rally behind him. But they did. And then I came to see, well, for whatever reason, God is using him in some ways. And it's a challenge for us as parents, because I understand why people were turned off by him and some Christians couldn't bring themselves to vote for him. That may be the choice that we have again. But you're right. We need to challenge and we need to not just give a pass to the evil speech. And at the same time, we need to recognize what's in the balance here. Mm-hmm. And that is our republic. And that is the freedom for our children.
And, you know, Francis Schaeffer used to make a difference between what he called co-belligerence and alliances. So there are people whom we're shoulder to shoulder, heart to heart. We agree on principle across the board. That's an alliance. Co-belligerence, we will fight, say, with a lesbian who's against pornography.
Thank you. Yes.
Or whatever it is. In other words, people who are united with us against the things we oppose. And certainly the alternatives to Mr. Trump are appalling. Not just the weakness, but the radical left coming in through the Democratic Party are quite appalling and could spell the end of the Republic pretty fast.
Yes.
So we should be prudential, practical, realistic. You've got to vote for someone.
Yes, we do. And we need to pray for better, good choices at the ballot box and for God to raise up a Lincoln. We need that in our nation, don't we?
But do you know the wonderful story of Derek Prince, the great Bible teacher? He left Cambridge on the edge of the war as an atheist, and he was drafted into the army in North Africa, and he wanted to teach classics when he got back after the war, if he survived. So he took a whole number of the classics, including the Bible, and reading the Bible, became a Christian. Found himself in Africa, the longest retreat in British history, with the army deeply divided. Class is our English problem, the way you have race as a problem over here. It was a disaster. And in this disaster, Prince, as a new Christian, said, "Lord, how do you want me to pray?" And the Lord gave him this single prayer: "Lord, set over us a leader such that it would be for your glory to give the victory through him." Well, the general was he was a disaster. Churchill fired him. Sent out a second person who died en route in an accident. Sent out a third general, a young, untested general who happened to be the son of a Christian leader back in Britain. And they'd retreated 800 miles, the longest retreat in British history. And they were now defending Cairo, Alexandria, and the road to Jerusalem and the Suez Canal, the last stand. And the general got the army together. He said, "Men, let us pray to the Lord of the army, the Lord of hosts." And when Prince heard this on his transistor, he wasn't there present, the Lord said to him, "This is the man to whom you prayed for 2 years." And the battle the next week was the Battle of El Alamein. And as Winston Churchill said, up till El Alamein, all defeat. After El Alamein, all victory. Now, my wife Jenny and I, we pray literally every single morning, "Lord, set over us a leader, such that it will be for your glory to give the victory through him or her." Because it could be a woman, it could be a man, but we're praying that there's someone who the Lord, and at the speaker level, we have Mike Johnson.
Thank you. Yes.
Great man. But we need someone at the very highest level, the presidency.
I agree. And you know what? I am greatly encouraged. I suspect you probably were as well. Giorgia Meloni, Italy's prime minister, when she came out, did you hear her fiery speech where she quoted Chesterton? Fires will be kindled to testify that two and two make four. Swords will be drawn to prove that leaves are green in summer. That time has arrived. We are ready. So if God can do this in Italy, he can do this here, can't he?
I hope so. No, of course he can. Of course he can.
Yes, I agree. We play a part in that, though, don't we? Because like you said, we are a republic, which means that we have to vote. So I cannot thank you enough, Oz, for enlightening both me and our listeners on where we are in human history and the critical crossroad that we are at right now. Tell us where they can learn more about you and get a copy of your book, The Magna Carta of Humanity.
Well, the book's on Amazon, probably.
Mm-hmm. Anywhere you get books.
My website, ozguinness.com.
Simple as that. In the next episode, I want to back this up a little bit, Oz. You've so kindly given us your time today, and I would like to talk about the magnitude of what God did with his Genesis declaration that we are made in his image. The seeds of freedom are found there, and then how God planted that blueprint for freedom in the Hebrew nation when he formed the Hebrew Republic. Why is this important for us as parents to think about? Because we have to pass these seeds on to the next generation. Our children need to know where freedom comes from because the world is telling them that it comes from another source. Newsflash, the world lies. The next episode, we're going to discover the truth about who God is, who we are as individuals, who we are as a nation, and the kind of people God has created us to be. Thank you, Oz.
Thank you.
Wow. That was a really powerful conversation. You know, I am over a half a century old, and up until a week ago, I had never heard a U.S. president in person. But I was blessed to attend the National Religious Broadcasters Conference in Nashville, Tennessee, a week ago. All current candidates for the office of the presidency were invited to speak. Only one came. And I bet you can guess who that was. Yes, it was Donald J. Trump. That is telling, perhaps. Some would say that this is an example of nationalism run amok in evangelical circles. I would beg to differ. The serious qualms we have with our choice at the ballot box was seriously addressed in this episode. So what was my takeaway having seen Trump in person? Well, he is exactly who I know him to be. Bold, boisterous, braggadocious, funny, energetic, brave. There were terrible storms in Nashville that day, by the way, and Trump's private jet circled the airport for hours. The pilot was not sure if they should land. Trump insisted, according to Trump, and he finally arrived like an hour and a half late to a packed room of about 7,000 onlookers. But, you know, he was none worse for the wear. I will say this, yes, he is narcissistic. But my primary takeaway from his hour plus speech was this. He is a friend of Christians and Jews and other religious groups. He is a friend of conservatives and constitutionalists and people who love what this country was created to be. And he is a friend of the common man. I don't always love the way that friendship is expressed. And like Oz said, we need to hold him accountable. We need to do a better job at that. But he supports our concerns. He vowed to make gender surgery on minors illegal. He vowed to support the unborn. He vowed to elect conservative constitutionalists to the Supreme Court. He vowed to support our religious freedom. He vowed to maintain our sovereignty and support the bedrock of our free society, which is expressed in our First Amendment, which is free speech. Mm-hmm. And history shows that Trump is a man who lives up to his campaign promises. Personally, I can ally myself with someone who fights for these things. Beyond that, I pray for Trump and Biden and Kamala Harris and our senators and state representatives to have an encounter with the Most High God and to govern in a way that pleases him by addressing injustice in a godly way and procuring freedom for all. And most of all, I pray that God sets over us a leader that it would be to his glory to give the victory through him or her. Yeah, that's a prayer to put on all our whiteboards. I'm very pleased to say that I have one more episode with Oz to share with you. He was so gracious with his time. In it, we are going to dig into the origin of freedom as expressed through God with the Genesis declaration that we are made in his image. This is such a radical concept that is necessary for freedom to exist, just like we discussed with Dr. Grotius a few episodes ago. It's necessary for equality to exist, but also freedom. A free God created a free humanity, male and female, in his image, and desires for us to remain in that freedom. But we cannot maintain that freedom unless we understand its roots. You cannot arrive at freedom from a secular source. Our kids need to know this, moms and dads. It is God who liberates, and it is God who sets us free. I want to thank you for joining me today. Look, I know there are a lot of things you could be listening to right now, and I really appreciate that you took this time to spend with me. I hope you will join me for my next podcast when we take aim at some aspect of our culture that threatens to derail our parenting and steal our kids' faith. If you enjoyed this episode of Christian Parent Crazy World, would you consider telling a friend and sharing it on social media and giving it a good review over on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and following me on Facebook and Instagram? Oh, and maybe you could say that Christian Parent Crazy World is the best podcast you've ever heard in your entire life. Just a thought. And be sure to check out my website, which is KatherineSegers.com. That's Catherine with a C. I have lots of articles and resources there that will help you on your parenting journey. And if you subscribe, I will be sure to send you some really cool free stuff and notify you of future podcasts, articles, and blogs. I want to end this and every episode with a word of encouragement. God gave you your kids, your specific kids, for a reason. That's because you hold the key to unlocking who God created them to be. We'll see you next time. Christian Parent Crazy World is a production of Life Audio and Salem Media. If you liked what you heard today, please take a second to rate and review this podcast in your favorite podcast app so that more listeners like you can find the show. For more faith-filled, inspirational podcasts, visit us at lifeaudio.com.
Hello, my name is Adam Comer.
And I'm Ryan Chittister.
And we're the host of Life After Addiction Podcast. If you or someone you love struggles with addiction, check us out, Life After Addiction Podcast, and you can subscribe at lifeaudio.com.